it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket World Cup Daily Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Scene, who we've partnered with to deliver all of our England Daily podcasts and videos for the rest of the 2023 World Cup. Starting soon on Wisden.com, Scene will be powering our new interactive videos, allowing you to easily skip to certain segments and find relevant articles, offers and opportunities by simply clicking directly within the video. It's taken nearly a month to the day, 6 defeats in 7, including 5 on the trot. England are officially knocked out of the 2023 World Cup. The defence is over. I'm Yaz Ron, and with me to talk about today's two games, so England's loss to Australia and also Pakistan's remarkable and tournament salvaging victory over New Zealand, are Mark Butcher and Jim Wallace. I don't know about you guys, I'm sort of relieved it's over.
Yeah, that would be the overwhelming and overriding feeling right now. It's just been horrendous, isn't it? Ben Stokes gave an interview a couple of days ago. It might have been yesterday, and he basically summed it up pretty well. So we've just been crap, and it's difficult to come up with any better description. Really, I was listening on the way in to the Oval, had the radio on, and it must have been sort of Livingston and Moeen got out in quick succession, and the signal packed in. So I decided to put a bit of Dylan on instead, and. Shelter from the Storm was on, and a line came out of it that seemed pretty appropriate. I took too much for granted and got my signals crossed, and that one jumped out at me somehow because it seemed to be pretty apt for the entire campaign. I think it's probably a massive relief to everybody that we no longer have to kind of like consider points on the decimal scale for net run rates. Well, and
we sort of do for Champions Trophy qualification. Well, yeah,
there is that. Well, you know, maybe that feels like a different competition now. That's building houses or planting trees for future generations, isn't it? Keep people interested in 50 over cricket. But oh my goodness,
yeah,
it's been horrific.
Jim, have you got any lyrics for us? This is the first time you've been on after an England game.
It's funny you said Dylan, because I've been using this line, sad-eyed Joss of the low scores, because every time he come, you know, they wheel him out after a match and his eyes just, there's so much pain and sadness in them. So I think, yeah, it's good that they're finally gone. I think it's it'd be good for everyone, good for us. We can all move on. You know, yeah. It's like a clean slate.
Remarkably, it's still more than 2 weeks of the tournament to go. Not to show what's under the bonnet of this operation too much, but for weekend games, I tend to work at home for the first innings and come in for the second innings here to our, you know, state-of-the-art studio at the Oval. And let's just say there's not a long gap between my alarm going off and the toss. And without fail, every weekend England game this tournament, that pre-game ritual includes a WhatsApp from Butch picking holes in the selection or the toss decision. Butch, this is the fifth defeat on the trot. Yeah. Where do you want to start with this one?
Oh, boy. I mean, the fact that they rolled out the same team again was a bit of a surprise. I mean, you could, and we made lots of arguments for sort of reasons why Ben Stokes perhaps shouldn't appear again in the tournament, not least because of his physical well-being more than anything else. Obviously, David Willey plays, having announced his retirement as well. Although, you know, I didn't see any reason for him not to be included in the 11 unless he didn't want to be. But the fact that Harry Brooks still couldn't make it into a batting lineup that is misfiring to, you know, at a rate of sort of the old muskets that they might have been wheeling out in the English Civil War is quite something. It really is. And the fact that kind of, you know, the idea that Moeen and Livingston would sort of make up a fifth bowler between them because of their batting prowess, and of course the batting side of it has been not particularly well. It's been been awful, and the bowling side of it not much better. It just seemed to me that there was a very compelling case that Harry Brook played in that team, and one of those two set it out. And that if you had to find overs from somewhere, you turn to the guy that people are more than happy to bowl 30 overs in Test matches, in Joe Root, who doesn't ever seem to get a bowl in the 50 over stuff, which seems bizarre to me.
Yeah, but people often, Jim, they often accuse pundits of being wise after the event. But I think the Moeen Livingston thing is something that we were talking about well in advance of the World Cup. And you have Moeen at six. I looked up today. Today, he only got 30-odd with the bat. That was his highest score in a run chase in ODI cricket against a full member since before the 2019 World Cup.
Yeah.
He averages low 20s in ODI cricket, batting in the top six. And you've got Moeen at six, Livingston at seven, and on a pretty slow wicket that was very receptive to turn. Their 10 overs, their combined 10 overs went for 70. And I feel like it's a bit like that Curran conundrum early in the tournament where they're simultaneously making the lineup look short on both bowling and batting. And it almost feels like England are playing with 10, especially when they end up literally bowling exactly 10 overs. And you saw Travis Head, who bowls a lot less than they do, bowling a pretty serviceable 5-over spell for Australia. It feels weird that England have gone so all in on these two guys, and there's not that much evidence that either of them, particularly in terms of batting at six, really works.
Mm-hmm. Like you, I mean, I didn't text you, but I saw the thing this morning and I was like, what are they doing? I can only think, do you think there's an element of they're trying to keep the stench of defeat off Harry Brook or something like that? They're saving him from that? I don't, like, why would you not play him? Like, I don't understand it at all. Give him some experience in a World Cup that's only going to, you know, serve England well for the next few years. But yeah, it was really confusing. There's a Peter Cook quote, you'll know this. It's like, I've learned from my mistakes and I plan to make them all over again. it's basically that every time. It's like, all right, well, yeah. And I'm sure maybe I think there's a bit of bloody-mindedness there that, all right, well, we're going to go down all guns blazing, but not guns blazing. It's sort of, we're just going to go down by picking the same team, sticking the same guys.
A lot of store seems to have been made. And England are not the only teams that have done it through the tournament. A lot of store seems to have been made in due kind of wildly changing the conditions to make chasing a much, much, much easier prospect. And it kind of hasn't really played out at all. It certainly hasn't played out for England. I mean, their run chases have been horrendous. They're not a particularly strong chasing side anyway, haven't been since 2019. And they keep putting a batting lineup that is misfiring horrendously under the pressure of having to chase runs. And I just don't understand it.
After fielding for 3 hours in 35-degree heat as well.
Four hours as they sort of be getting up to in steaming hot daytime conditions.
Because they've not played Atkinson right either. So I can only think, being charitable, it's something to do with protecting them. You know, I don't know, maybe holding them back for, you know, to let those older guys who maybe have been around the block a bit more, who, you know, maybe used to it, and saving them for, I don't know what they're saving them for, but it seems a bit baffling to me.
I'm not sure it is that, but I think they you know, they're still playing for Champions Trophy qualification legitimately, as much as we joke about it. That is something they're playing for. And also, I think that they rightly got a lot of criticism earlier in the tournament for how much they changed from one game to another. They went from one extreme.
Which was the game? It was the South Africa game
where Willie was
at
seven.
You know, and we'd sort of spoken after the two previous defeats that they were going to have to change. Curran was going to have to sit it out, and Wokes was having an absolute nightmare. And so Atkinson perhaps to come in and bowl middle overs or whatever it is, and he's also got good prowess at the death. And in the one game that he played, he performed really, really well. Mark Wood bowled well today, but still, you know, he bowls well and goes at eights. You know, it's baked in that's what happens. But when they did make all those changes in the South Africa game, they kind of made ones that we didn't foresee. You know, Livingston sat that one out. And of course they shortened the batting lineup to an incredible degree, and then decided to chase runs as well. It just none of that made any sense. And I can understand, you know, sort of them saying to themselves, "Well, look, you know, this is not what we do. We try to bat deep. We do want the all rounders into the team." But there was a way of doing that whereby you still had specialist top six batters. And had enough bowling to get through your 50, but you just would have had to have fiddled it a little bit better than they've done. And now, you know, ostensibly they were out of the competition before the game started today. It just, to me, it didn't make any sense. The worst news out of the tournament will probably be, you know, and Stokes is going to have a knee operation now, which has now been delayed by, you know, if you're really being critical, you could say, well, perhaps he should have done that straight after the Ashes finished and kind of, you know, not worried about the World Cup, but you can understand his keenness to come out and defend the title. But Mark Wood, notoriously injury prone. Mm. There's a massive 5 test match series against India coming up in February, and him playing at the moment it doesn't make any sense from performance, and it also doesn't make any sense now that they're out of the tournament for him to potentially kind of put one too many miles on the clock and end up with something serious that keeps him out of that test series.
What do you think has gone wrong with Wood this tournament? Because he's been really expensive. A lot of players have underperformed, but statistically, he's one of them. Sometimes when Wood doesn't do as well on paper as he can do, sometimes you look at the speed gun and you're like, oh, the speed gun's down. It's really not the case here. Not. Today, he's 96
wide. MPH. He's bowled wide. I mean, that's been the main issue, really, has been that he's given too much width. The amount of times he's kind of been carved over point and sliced over third man and all the rest of it. And if you bake in the fact that somebody bowling at that sort of speed is going to give away boundaries, but you know, to good balls, you know, you just have to get a bat on it and away it flies. But in the main, he would have been probably a foot wide of off stump, which in one day cricket is kind of not helpful, particularly at that pace.
Does he also suffer from being one paced? So you can sort of, it's fast, but you can start to line it up and expect it.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, my brother came up with a good point the other day in that perhaps the best time to use Mark Wood is because he's not very good at the death. He never has been really a sort of a banker death bowler, but you might think about giving him the new ball when the ball swings. You know, Australia's bowled, the ball has swung for quick bowlers, has moved for quick bowlers in the power play, and perhaps given his skill, you know, we watched him here at the Oval, watched him at Headingley bowling 150 clicks, bowling these booming outswingers. And thinking, well, maybe if you're going to get the absolute best out of him and the optimum in terms of him taking wickets for you, which is basically what he's in the team to do, that might be the time to do it. Now, that's huge Harry hindsight. I mean, I didn't come up with that myself, and I didn't come up with it at the beginning of the tournament. But the more you think about it, you kind of go, well, if he plays, then, and if you need him to take you to knock three over in that power play and get England off to a flyer with the ball, then that might be the best way to go about doing it.
Jim, I thought there was a clearer plan in the run chase, in that they were more confident in just preserving wickets, keeping the required rate just about in check. But they kept, A, losing wickets at the wrong time, which doesn't help when that's your strategy. Number two, again, they got really bogged down against spin. Adam Zampa bowled brilliantly, but 3 for 21 off his 10 overs. Rashid bowled brilliantly, but he was 2 for 38 off his 10. Mm-hmm. And it's the fourth time this competition that England have let an opposition spinner bowl a spell that's gone at less than threes. Not even less than fours, less than threes.
Yeah.
What have you made of how England have countered spin this tournament?
I think it smacks of where they are. You know, it's a slightly timid, and you know, when you're feeling maybe a bit low on confidence, and the losses are stacking up, then Butch will know, surely, like that'll inhibit you from coming dancing down and using your feet and being proactive. So if you just allow, you know, I was watching the we'll come on to the Pakistan New Zealand game. Santner was just, he's so good at just, he'll get in and out of an over and it's like, oh shit, six balls have gone. Mm. And the batter almost is like, oh, you know, that's a maiden or a single or a couple off it. And that's a big victory for the bowler in that situation. So I think probably they were better today. They looked a bit more composed, albeit they lost wickets at the wrong time. But it didn't seem quite as, it wasn't quite as depressing as some of them have been. But
the other thing with the spinners is I've noticed there's been a sort of like a real sort of reluctance to sweep and reverse sweep, which has got kind of been what England have kind of destroyed spin with over the years. And also Joe Root getting out of the power play before the spinners come on. Now he's our best player of spin. He's our best knocker and accumulator of runs in the middle overs when the spinners come on, and he hasn't been there. He's not been batting. He's been out in the first 10 overs.
What have you made of that? He literally averages 5 from 18 innings in the power play since the 2019 World Cup. And that is obviously horrendous, but given the form of Bairstow at the minute, that is every single game at the moment Stokes is coming in the first 5-6 overs.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and therein also gives you another clue as to why they've not been so good against spin, because the best time as a fielding captain to bring your spinner onto the attack is outside of the power play with the opposition 2 or 3 down. You know, that is entirely when you're looking to bring him on. You're hoping that your new ball bowlers make breakthroughs, and then you hit the middle order with spin as they come in cold. As far as his form is concerned, I don't know. I can't really give you an answer to that. He's looked more and more out of rhythm as the tournament has gone on. And you know, maybe his trigger movements are getting him a little bit closed off to the ball, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I mean, he's a fabulous player having a horrible trot, and he's not the only one.
Just a couple of things in Australia. I thought that one, for them to get that win today with effectively a 13-man squad, because Maxwell was out with a concussion, Mitch Marsh was back home for personal reasons. I think especially the loss of Maxwell on a pitch that was that receptive to turn and so slow and low, it was quite a big deal. And also I think that we talked about it right at the start of the tournament, but by his own admission, Pat Cummins said that he was still figuring out his role with the ball in ODIs. I think he's come on leaps and bounds across the tournament, and he looks really actually one of the most impressive middle over operators. And if you're looking at Australia, have obviously improved as the tournament's gone, Head coming back's helped, but I think Cummins actually like really nailing that job is pretty big,
because in the India series when they played earlier in the year, he was way off it. Cummins, he was, I think he had some personal stuff going on at the same time with his mum and stuff, and he went back and forth. But yeah, because I was covering some of that series, and he looked really out of rhythm and really sort of annoyed. You know, when a bowler, Bolt had it today, just looked annoyed from the get go because, you know, he just sort of wasn't coming out right. But yeah, I agree. He's been a bit of a, as in his understated way, a bit of a revelation.
Yeah.
Again.
Scrumming Fly Half asks, was today Bairstow's worst ever dismissal against Australia? Bairstow was out strangled down the leg side off the first ball of the England innings.
The Lord's one was quite bad in the summer, wasn't it?
That might have been what he was referring to with the question. I mean, you know, again, it's sort of the he being one of the most, or perhaps the most destructive top order player in 50 over cricket over the last goodness knows how many years, and it's just been anonymous, isn't he, in the tournament. And again, there's no particular reason for that, barring not perhaps being in great nick and then finding interesting ways of getting out. But all in all, you go down the entire list really, and no one's looked. Nobody, barring actually Harry Brook, who played in the games that he played in with some proper fluency and looked as though he had the game and the confidence to kind of take on spin in the middle overs and all that kind of stuff. Nobody else. Everyone has looked a shadow of themselves. Mm.
And that's rare, isn't it, to have no one in form at all? Like, just no one really being like, oh, well, we've got him. Butler comes in and you used to think, all right, well, here we go. And now my natural reaction is he's going to go before he gets to 10, you know, and it's just... I thought
that was such an uncharacteristic Butler dismissal, because there wasn't anything different about that ball. He just
clothed it.
He just clothed
it. I mean, Zampa's got the wood on him anyway, sort of historically. But I mean, now there's a man to talk about, isn't it, Adam Zampa? I mean, he sort of got mauled in the opening rounds of the tournament, but he is now looking he's looking sort of impregnable with the ball and the 20 odd runs that he made at the back end were the difference between the two teams. So he's having a stunner of a tournament.
And he's brilliant in the field as well.
Yeah.
We've had a few questions in the last week about whether or not this tournament will affect the test team. So spectacular has the collapse been, and how there's actually quite significant crossover between the 50 over and test setups in terms of personnel. Do you think that will? We've compared it to Ashes tour's gone wrong a few times, but it really does feel like that, if not longer. At least in an Ashes tour, you've got a test to play for, and that's a really big deal. It's not quite the same at the back end of a World Cup where you're dumped out in the first couple of weeks.
No, I mean, potentially, but this sort of, I suppose you'll get a real stark contrast in the sort of in the personalities around the two setups, won't you? Stokes then goes back to being captain and the boss, McCullum and all of his freewheeling stuff, and players kind of looking like they're having a damn sight more fun, which is basically what's happened in the test arena.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing, I guess the real, I don't think the two things are going to be linked in any way whatsoever. All I will say is they're in the same place, you know. Mm. And India is the test for any team in over what looks like 50 over cricket as well, but also in test matches. And so, you know, whatever England do and however they play, India are going to take some beating. So, you know, this is not helpful, but I don't think it will be indicative of what happens.
Yeah, I was just thinking that the IPL test guys who are at the World Cup, they might as well just move to India. Like, just, you know, you get there late September and you come back in May.
It's interesting because it was the same group of players that were playing under Joe Root in the main when England lost 17 tests or whatever. Mm. And then it wasn't long before that same group of players were, you know, world beaters and beating everyone. So I think it is a form thing more than anything. And you know, form comes and goes and you can get back into it. So hopefully by the time the test stuff comes around with a bit of a break and a bit of a... but it will be tough to go back to the same place, the same stadiums for some, you imagine, you know. You know, from playing club cricket, if you go back to somewhere where you get absolutely smashed.
Bad memories, Thames didn't away. But you alluded to it earlier. David Willey announced his retirement from international cricket in the week leading up to this game. Not hugely surprising given the central contract news, but he's actually been one of England's most, arguably England's most dependable performer at the World Cup. What did you make of the announcement, and I guess in particular the timing of it?
I don't make a massive amount of it at all, actually. I mean, hats off to him to perform the way that he's done, given everything that's going on around it. So I don't, you know, it just sort of proves what a fantastic, sort of fantastically mentally strong person he is to be able to sort of go out there and perform whilst all of that is wrangling on in the background. Obviously, the whole contracts thing is perhaps not, I don't know, they've sort of said that it's not been a distraction whatsoever, but I don't think it could have helped. And of course, you're always looking for anything you can cling on to as to why the team isn't performing particularly well, but I don't think that that's one of them. Mm. I think the most interesting thing for me around David Willey is that if you think about 2019, David Willey was not good enough to get into England's 15. And in this World Cup, he's kind of been first name on the team sheet. And that kind of gives you an idea as to sort of like where perhaps the, you know, the skill level, particularly in the bowling lineup, has kind of fallen away between one tournament and the next. Mm. You know, a guy who was surplus to requirements has actually been the guy you can depend upon most. And that's not saying a great deal for the other guys, is it?
Yeah, definitely.
And he's definitely been playing with the bit between his teeth, as in, he wants to go down in a good fashion. And there's been a bit, you can sense a little bit of a, you know, well, F you, I'm going to, you know, this is what I can do. And this is the stage that I'm going to do
it on. And he's in the, you know, you're always in the window, aren't you? I mean, kind of thinking about Daryl Mitchell making the 100 in the loss against India the other day. Anything you do in India in front of the cricket watching world that serves you well for whatever else comes afterwards, whether or not the team you're playing for wins or not. You know, it's very important to give a good account of yourself.
Well, there are quite a few players who've become millionaires basically just the performances against India, like Carl Jameson got his massive contract, Sam Curran got his massive contract after the performance against India.
If only you'd done better at Thames Ditton.
If only I did better at Thames Ditton. Anyway, that's it for part one. In part two, Jim will talk us through Pakistan's remarkable win over New Zealand.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons. This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So for those of you who might have missed this, New Zealand hit 401. Ratchan Ravindra registered his third 100 of the World Cup. He's still only 23 years old. And there were solid contributions from basically everyone else. Williamson got runs. But somehow that wasn't enough. In a rain-affected second innings, Pakistan hit 200 for one from 25.3 overs, which gave them a 20-run win on DLS. Jim, that's just vintage Pakistan.
It was absolute...
And also, thank you for keeping the tournament alive.
Yeah. Rumbles on and there's still so many permutations. We were messaging, I was like, I couldn't believe that some of the guys, you know, for England. England are like that, what's it from Terminator 2? T-1000, you know, the guy that gets shot and just keeps coming back. I was like, surely, if Pakistan win this, can England still sneak through? You're like, yeah, there's a way of doing it. And it was like, yeah, this is... But it was absolute carnage. Confession time, I was a bit hungover this morning and I was doing the over by over and I was like, I just want a quiet morning. And when I saw that New Zealand had posted 400, I was like, oh, you know, maybe Pakistan will get skittled for 100 or so and it'll be, you know, be quite over quite quickly and yeah. I can get about replenishing
myself. And here you are at 520.
And here I am at 520 talking about it, yeah, with bags under my eyes. But, you know, doing an over by over of that Fakhar Zaman stuff, it was chaos because, you know, he was... I mean, massive hits. There's a small ground there at Bengaluru, but they were like almost going out of the stadium. He kept on clearing his front leg and getting down on one knee and talk about playing the spinners confidently. Sodhi, Santner and Phillips, you know, they all disappeared. So yeah,
it was that innings as good as it looks on the scorecard? 126 off 81, 11 sixes. Yeah. He's hit 18 sixes in two innings. He wasn't in the team for most of the tournament,
by the
way. Yeah,
he wasn't in the team 2 weeks ago.
And those 18 sixes are as many as the entirety of the rest of the Pakistan top order put together across the entirety of the tournament.
Yeah, and he was a real cool dude after in the match thing. He was sort of like, yeah, you know, that's what I do. I smash sixes.
This is what I do.
into the crowd. But it was really impressive because the pressure was on. You know, their tournament hopes basically were on the line. They lost an early wicket and I was clapping my hands thinking, here we go. And you know, and they came in and down the other end, Babar Azam was doing his Babar Azam thing of sort of taking quite a few balls to get in. I was listening to a bit of TMS and I can't remember who it was, but was going absolutely nuts at Babar, you know, being like, he's not even trying to hit bound. Meanwhile, down the other end, he was just knocking singles and twos. Yeah. He didn't really need to because down the other end it was.
And that one wicket was crucial in the DLS, right? The target changed depending on how many wickets you lose.
So if they'd lost another, they were gone, I think, because it just makes it that much harder. Yeah. And I'm not sure how, when the first rain delay came, I'm not sure how much they would have known. I'm not sure that they were playing for that. I think they were just hunting down 400. There was no, you know, we need to be at this stage after 21 overs.
But second rain delay, do you think it was more obvious that they're aware that it was more
weather? I think so. I think by then the clouds had set in and it was still drizzling, I think, when it came out. And I'm
the
sure they would have had a chat.
That it was coming.
Yeah, it was coming. And then New Zealand bowls Ish Sodhi, and there was quite a lot of, why would you bowl a spinner to him? He's just been pumping them out of the ground for the past hour and a half. And I think that over went for 15 or 17 or something with two or three big sixes. And then they came off again. Yeah. So it was a shame. I actually, by the end of it, despite the hangover, I managed to get a bacon sarnie in the gap as well in one of the rain delays. Well, so then I was replenished and like, I want this to go. So it was a real shame because actually I think it could have been one of those classics.
Anything completely ridiculous coupled together with Pakistan in the World Cup, and you can guarantee it's going to happen. So I for one, because if people have been listening through from the beginning of this, you just, you know, they will find a way somehow. You've got the chairman standing down, the chief selector's gone, there are ructions everywhere. The entire sort of Pakistan cricketing, organization is being sort of called into question for corruption and goodness knows whatever else. And yet, still get an India-Pakistan semi-final.
Then they concede 400, you think, that's surely 400
and win.
I think with Pakistan, the other crucial bit is the most important person to their campaign is always someone who's not in the side at the halfway point. Always the case. But that's the second time in the history of ODI cricket that 400... technically has been chased, not since the 4-3-8 game at Joburg. Not to put a damn squib on this game, but 200 for one off 25 and a half overs, chasing 402. That doesn't feel the same to me. All the win predictor tools had New Zealand at about 75% at the point the game came to an end.
Yeah.
Yet DLS has Pakistan as 21 run winners.
But that, you know, that sheet comes out at halfway and you kind of, and it's there. It's written down in black and white. I mean, again, that lots of things had to go right. You know, had Faka got out, then the chances are they would have been a long way behind, regardless of the two wickets changing the changing the run point, because he's, you know, he's the one guy, I suppose, who can kind of go at that at those sort of rates. But you know, the fact that he's only played, what was it, his second game in the tournament, is bizarre, isn't it? I mean, really. You know, and he'd been sort of left out on the back of a sort of a run of low scores, but it wasn't long ago that he'd scored 300s in the trot against New Zealand, right, in back in it would have been April, I guess.
And also those low scores are in completely different pitches to the ones you get.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's an X factor player for them, and he really ought to be in every 11 that they put out.
Yeah, and also because the rest of their top order are all quite similar in style. They're all like quite classical stroke makers and not necessarily six hitters.
Some of his weren't too classical, but they were still really fun to watch.
I mean, he's a proper munger.
Yeah. and obviously it didn't really work out for Pakistan because they did concede 401, but Pakistan going in with that strategy of not playing either the leg spinning all-rounders in Shadab Khan and Usam Amir. They're basically playing four quicks in Shaheen, Hassan Ali, Harris Ralph and Mohammad Wasim, who had a very good game actually, 3 for 60 of his 10, and is hoping that Iftikhar and Aga Salman can get through the other 10. And they actually conceded 76 off their combined 10 overs, which actually in the grand scheme of things was pretty good.
I'm not sure that's a strategy that will see them all the way through. But then, you know, that means it probably will.
Probably will.
Yes.
And also, Salman Agha is one of those guys who I swear 6-7 times out of 10 doesn't do anything in a cricket match. But since he came into the side, they've looked like a completely different team. Richard asked, is it on for Pakistan? Can they squeak into the last four and then turn it on in a semi-final against India and win the whole thing just as they plan? Great win for Pakistan. They still are relying on Sri Lanka to do them a favour against New Zealand. Even if it's not a win, just making sure that game's close so Pakistan can do a net run rate turnaround. And also that's relying on Afghanistan not getting wins against either South Africa or Australia. But yeah, Pakistan, England, that anything could happen.
Yeah, and it means that, you know, what we got left, 9 games, 10 games of the tournament, it means they're all kind of, they've all got something on them.
It's taken a while to get here, but it's really interesting now.
I mean, you know, it's been reflected, I think, in the crowd. You know, a little bit like you see in sort of the interest in sort of IPL tournaments. At the beginning, everyone kind of wants to watch every team get through their first game or two. Then the middle bit, everyone packs it in. The World Cup has been slightly different in the beginning, before there was any jeopardy knocking around. You know, the crowds are pretty ambivalent towards games that weren't involving India. And now, of course, they were crammed in at Ahmedabad. I say crammed. There were still lots of seats left because it's a ginormous stadium. But you know, the interest from everybody, from the cricketing watching public, now that the points actually mean something, is ramped up.
Well, that's it for today. Cheers, Butch. Cheers, Jim. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Wisden Cricket World Cup Daily Podcast, powered by Scene. Once again, Scene are our video partners on Wisden.com, helping us to deliver a more engaging and immersive viewing experience across mobile, tablet, and desktop. Head to the link in the description to find out more.
Sports Social Podcast Network.